भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो 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 भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 15 टेक्स्ट 45 Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Can we have simultaneous translation?
We have only one channel working. Only one loudspeaker is working.
Well, you have a loud voice. It's just that the time for the lecture becomes literally halved. Get half the... It's all... supposed to be unlimitedly good, but still you only get half unlimited value. So, let's go on. As long as one has to have the personality of Godhead's mercy, one must then conquer the enemies mentioned above. In this way, the devotee should be able to merge into his own transcendental bliss, and then he may give up his body and resume his own spiritual identity. So, as you all know, today is Balaram Purnima, the Tithi, or lunar day of the full moon, which corresponds to the appearance day of Lord Balaram in this world. This evening, Purnachandra Prabhu will speak on Balaram Tattva. I heard him speak on this subject a few years ago. On Balaram Purnima in London, he was speaking on this. And I think I can safely say that you're going to get the Hare Krishna. He doesn't know how to go out. You have to open up so he can get out. How can he get out? They don't stop, these birds. They're always flying. They hardly stop. They won't settle anywhere. So you'll get a thoroughly researched lecture on Balaram with so many points from so many different scriptures this evening. He went out? He or she? He? You can tell. Well, if you know, you can tell. Like, male sparrows and female sparrows look different. So maybe swifts do also. But they move so fast you can't see them. So I'm not going to speak widely on Balaram Tattva. But as today, as Lord Balaram, as Prabhupada has emphasized in this purport, Lord Balaram, he is the guru, he's connected with Guru Tattva, he gives the strength. Balaram, Bala means strength. One name for Balaram is Bala. He is strength. He is strength personified. Balang balavatang chaham in Bhagavad Gita says, I am the strength of the strong. So Balaram is known as strength. He also, various forms of the Lord, specifically, various forms of the, apart from Krishna being Purna Purushottam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is never incomplete. But in among his many forms, the original form, Krishna, shows all the opulences. And some of the avatars, they exhibit specific opulences. So, Balaram, which one? Who can say, apart from Purnachandra? It's not strength. It's mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, I believe. Anyone? Beauty. Beauty of Krishna, the beauty of the Supreme Lord. So Balaram is famous for his strength, we could, his physical strength, of course, that's spiritual physical strength, dragging the whole city of Hastinapur towards the Yamuna, that's one instance. And as Anantade, this Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur, and in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami have both demonstrated the strength of Balaram, that by his expansion, Anantadev, he manifests and supports all the universes. And also Anantadev is known as the best devotee. So in this way also Balaram is guru, because he shows how to serve Krishna. And Balaram is fully concerned with serving Krishna. And I won't get into too many details, because this evening Purnachandra Prabhu will explain all these things. But it's a good day for giving initiation. It's a good day to take initiation. So we're having initiation ceremony this morning. So I'll speak not directly on Lord Balaram now, but on some topics of Guru Tattva, some points to be understood. There'll also be a class on the meaning of initiation, the importance of accepting a guru. This subject, it's a very, very big subject, Guru Tattva. And although often devotees, they want to know, is it like this or is it like that? Yesterday we were talking about Gyan and Bhakti. Gyan is solid, something fixed. Whereas Bhakti is, in pure Bhakti is spontaneous, it's unpredictable. So we want to know about Guru Tattva. We should know, but at the same time we should know that although Guru is one, inasmuch as every Guru represents Krishna, they represent the same principle. But at the same time, every Guru is a different person. And how exactly they represent Krishna to their disciples is going to be different in every case, because every Guru is a different person. So Guru Tattva is definable to some extent, but in other ways not. Each guru is a devotee of Krishna, has his own individual relationship with Krishna, and perceives Krishna somewhat differently to that of every other devotee. So he will tend to teach. Of course, he must teach according to Shastra. Archinoti ya Shastrani. The guru's first qualification is that he must teach according to Shastra. He doesn't teach according to Shastra, then he's not a guru. So, teaches according to Shastra. But Shastra, although from one perspective is definitive, but on the other hand, Krishna is not definable fully. To some extent, yes, but it's, again, the point I was making last night, it's not like in modern science we think we want to define everything. That is Gyan, but Bhakti begins with the understanding that we cannot fully understand Krishna. So Bhakti is spontaneous, whereas Gyan is defined, and the two go together. The guru gives knowledge of Krishna, but there's a difference between an academic teacher and a guru. There are many, not many, but some academic teachers. They study Vaishnavism, and in some ways they could explain the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, or maybe the philosophy of Ramanujacharya, or different strains of Vaishnava philosophy. They could in some ways explain it better than committed devotees, but they cannot communicate even one speck of bhakti. if they don't have it themselves, which generally those who are academic scholars don't have, because they take bhakti as something, as an object of gyan. Whereas rather, gyan is that which is a facet of bhakti. And if gyan doesn't lead to bhakti, then it's not gyan at all. So, simply to know and teach, that is in and of itself not the function of a guru. That's certainly to teach, but to communicate the spirit of bhakti, this service attitude, the service attitude means not just service that you can get service by pay. And in some of our temples, not in this part of the world, but in other parts of the world, where there's more money floating around, they sometimes employ, and they even sometimes the temple leaders even prefer that, because if you pay someone, you can tell them what to do and this and that. But unfortunately, that doesn't foster bhakti. You may say, well, could you cook an extra offering? How much are you going to give me? Oh, I already did mine 8 hours today. So that doesn't foster bhakti. That doesn't foster. You can service and service attitude, and not necessarily the same. The service attitude that I want to serve Krishna. And exactly how that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I don't want any pay, or the pay you give me, love of God. So, na dhanam, na janam, na sundaram. I want to serve you, ahai tuki bhakti, birth after birth. I want to serve you, but I don't want anything back. Prahlad Maharaj also protested to Nrisimhadeva that, why are you offering me something? I didn't serve you like a merchant. There's so many merchants coming. Give me this, give me that. You'll go to Tirumala, Balaji. So many people are coming. Give me this, give me that. They don't know who Balaji is. They don't even want to know, many of them. They're not that sick, but they think, he can give me something? Okay. It's a good business. Put 1,000 rupees donation and get 10,000 back. So, and it works. Otherwise, why are they going? They wouldn't be going. It wasn't working. They know. But this attitude is not one of bhakti. That may be something which can give some initial attraction to the Lord on a very low level. But bhakti means the spontaneous desire of the purified soul to serve Krishna. That spontaneous desire will not arise in the heart of one who is not purified. So Guru himself has to be purified, has to know how to serve Krishna, and has to instill in disciples that spirit of service to Krishna, which can only come about if one is purified. The purification comes from performing service and following the principles of bhakti yoga in following the vidhi sadhana bhakti. That is not an end in itself. The rules and regulations are taught. Guru himself, swayam acharate, he himself follows to teach others to set that example that this should be done. But following rules and regulations is not in and of it, doesn't in and of itself constitute bhakti. In the beginning stage, if we don't follow rules and regulations, then there's no hope of our coming to bhakti, because our spontaneous desire to serve Krishna having become perverted, it's as if we're spontaneously attracted to Maya. It's not the spontaneous desire of the soul, but it's the perverted consciousness that we become attracted immediately. Any nonsense, or so many different varieties of nonsense. Some people are attracted to different varieties according to the modes of nature and according to the individual proclivities which they have accrued, just like traveling through Europe, I found that, this World Cup was going on, so I was asking what in Finland they're doing. Oh, they're not so into, they're more into ice hockey. So someone may be attracted to ice hockey, and someone's attracted to soccer, and someone's attracted to different sports. And someone may have no interest in sports, but they're interested in going to movies or whatever it may be. So the tendency to be attracted to Maya seems almost spontaneous in the conditioned soul. So that is to be regulated. Rules and regulations. Don't go to the movies. Don't go to the football game. Don't. And yes, do this. Come to the arati. Chant Hare Krishna. Positive and negative. And then these... But that, go to the arati, chant Hare Krishna, that is meant to, is not meant simply as a rule. As Prabhupada once, one time, sarcastically said, he was chanting, and he put his beat back and said, now I've finished my 16 rounds, I can do any damn thing I like. But that's just to show us what the attitude should not be, in sarcasm, he's saying. But rather the chanting, as Prabhupada once says, what does this chanting lead to? More chanting. Chanting, all these processes of bhakti, that should lead to, by coming in contact with Krishna, because Krishna is so wonderful. And our natural relationship is with Him. So by following these processes, this spontaneous desire to serve Krishna should arise. So, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Etosha Bhav, Jai Jape Tar Krishna Upajai Bhav. It is the nature of the Hare Krishna Mantra that one who chants that mantra, their feelings for Krishna arise. So Krishna is a feelingful person. And it's natural that when we come in, if we have contact with anyone, then we develop some feelings for them. Except in the modern age, which is so impersonal. I think this hasn't come probably in Croatia yet, but in other more advanced countries, they're more advanced in ignorance. You could be living in an apartment in Stockholm or London for 10 years and only vaguely know the name of the person in the next apartment because it's written on the outside. Otherwise, you never even speak to them. That happens sometimes, that they found out someone's dead for the last 10 days by the smell coming out of the apartment. Otherwise, they don't have any relationship with anyone. But otherwise, generally, if we see people, we talk to them, even if we don't like them, there's some kind of relationship, even if it's one of dislike. So by coming in contact with someone, anyone, we have a relationship, even if it's a dog, or it might even be a chicken or anything, just some living being with some feeling for that. So I remember as a child I had, what a strange pet, a pet tortoise. So you have to hibernate them in the winter. You have to put them in some straw and they go to sleep during the winter. So he put him in the boiler house. And then when it was time for him to come out again, dead. He died in his sleep. Long sleep. So I was upset. Oh, my pet tortoise died. Oh. I'm sure the tortoise wasn't aware of it, but I had feelings for the tortoise, which became apparent when he died. So any living being we come in contact with, we develop feelings for. So certainly, if we come in contact, the whole idea of the rules and regulations is to bring us in contact with Krishna, so that our feeling, our natural feelings for Krishna arise. That process is main process in Kali Yuga, or the process in Kali Yuga, is chanting the holy names of Krishna. But the Pancharatriki Vidhi of worshipping the deities is also necessary. So we can realize this is Krishna. We have to feed, if we don't feed him, he's going to be hungry. We have to dress him. Now it's very cold in the morning. Gaunitai didn't have any chadar this morning. We all had chadars, but they didn't have chadars. So whoever's looking after them, please look after them. We should see. It's not some piece of wood, but Gaunitai, they're going to get a cold. You have to look after them. Yeah, they will. So, personal service. Make garlands, dress them very nicely. Shivigrahara dhana nityanana shringaratan mandira marjanado yuktasya bhaktangs chanayanjatopi vandeguru shri charanaravindam. Engaging in the deity worship and engaging disciples in deity worship, that's one of the duties. Again, for the spiritual master it's a duty, but for the disciple it's a duty. But for the spiritual master, that's he's acting in his constitutional position and training the disciples to do so. So all the rules and regulations are meant to bring us in contact with Krishna. And when we come in contact with Krishna in the devotional line, then we become, naturally our spontaneous feelings towards Krishna gradually arise. And that is the purpose of following the process of bhakti yoga, which begins with tasmat guru padashrayam, taking shelter of the lotus feet of a guru, Krishna dikshadi shikshanam, taking initiation in Krishna mantra. Guru means devotee of Krishna. Vaishnava Shvapacha Guru, who, whatever the family background of a Vaishnav, he must be a Guru. Vaishnav must be a Guru. No one else can be a Guru. So, Tasmat Guru Padasha. Then, Krishna Dikshadi Shikshanam, teaching. Teaching, again, not just by some academic method. That's also required. Major function or duty of the guru is to teach scripture to the disciple. Then Vishrambhena Guru Seva, serving the guru with affection. These are the beginning activities. Among the 64 principal items of devotional service enumerated by Srila Rupa Goswami, the first four concern the guru, because it's not do it yourself. Do it yourself bhakti. All the scriptures, then they're not, traditionally they're not meant that you just pick it up and read it. Rather, one is taught by the guru and the scriptures are there. They're like reference books to refer back to. Or the guru teaches Shastra, and then you can see what is written, what the acharyas have written. One disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who I spent a lot of time with, he told me he was living in the Gauriya Math for about 13 years before the disappearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said at that time we didn't read many books. We didn't read so much. We were so busy in service. But we did a lot of hearing. And he said, I learned so many shlokas and we were going out and preaching, but we hardly read. We'd hear. Because, of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his lectures were usually minimum 2 hours, and sometimes 4 hours or more. We don't have the patience nowadays. But then he said, later I read, and then I saw everything is there. So many shlokas I'd learned by hearing. So that's the traditional system. We think that books are for intellectuals, but from the Vedic perspective, books are for less intelligent people. who can't hear and remember. Therefore, we need books. So, Jyoti Shekhar Prabhu. So, hearing, that is the important function, hearing from Guru. Hearing, serving, what are the three functions that are stated in Bhagavad Gita? That pranipat, bowing down, approaching in a submissive attitude. Otherwise, there's no meaning of disciple. That in the modern age, there's the idea of democracy. Everyone has rights. Citizens' rights, women's rights, children's rights, animals' rights. I'm just wondering when in ISKCON they're going to have the disciples' rights movement. Why is this guru? Why are they always telling us what to do? I think we are, you know, it's too much. We should all be equal. But, well, there's some idea like that, this Ritvik movement, that everyone's all in it. Prabhupada's way, 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 way up above there, and no one else can come anywhere near him, which is true in one sense, but on the other hand, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that unless someone takes the position of guru, then how can the parampara go on? And anyway, it has to be. If anyone's come, even if you say no guru, still someone has to teach others. It's in many ways it's just semantics or word jugglery, as Prabhupada used to say, because those who take the position of Ritviks, I see in Bangalore, someone has declared Ritvik, he's well known to be like a dictator in his own temple, and he's more like an acharya, and our own ISKCON gurus, which, like, you know, we all work with each other and we work with the temple presidents and this and that. So it's more like the Ritvik idea than the Ritvik say. And they themselves become more like the absolute acharyas. So it's a funny world. So one has to submit. That's, I need to learn. I come humbly. That... it's not a matter of, coming to guru is not an interfaith dialogue. Well, what do you think? Well, yeah, that's all right. Well, I think this, and it's not a bad idea. Yeah, okay. I can accept part of that. It's not like that. Prabhupada said, don't accept a guru unless you're prepared to surrender. That important word, surrender. It definitely isn't a concept that comes in the modern Western culture. The idea that one has to submit oneself fully to another. Rather, the whole modern Western culture rebels against this idea of there should be any, material life, that there should be any fixed leader. They have the citizens vote a leader, and in many countries they have you can't be, like in America, it's 2 times 4 years, right? And that's it, time's up. You're out. However popular you may be. They have such distrust that anyone is competent to lead. So they give you leadership, but okay, you can be a leader, we vote you in, but only for a limited time. They don't try, practically, they're admitting, by having such a system, they're admitting that we need a leader, but we can't really trust anyone as a leader. The trust is required to submit, but who are we going to trust? Well, again, in Shastra is the center. There are guidelines in Shastra. We say we have to learn Shastra from a guru. Yes, but within the Vedic culture, there is the... apart from systematically studying Shastra, there's also general knowledge within the very culture. Even without learning from a guru, from childhood one will learn from gurus. The first guru is the mother. And practically the grandmothers, they tell so many stories to the children from Mahabharata and Ramayana. So, and then in the village there are people will come, the Puranikas, they will tell stories from the Puranas, and there'll be dramas of the Lord's Leelas. So one imbibes the concept of, just by hearing and being in that culture, one imbibes the concept. There are gurus, just like we see Ram, he was taken by Guru Vishvamitra, so, and who was teaching him as they walked along, so many things. So that concept is imbibed. So one has to have a general idea. If one is to approach Guru, one has to have a general idea what you're going for. Just like Prabhupada said, he gave the example that if you want to buy an electrical item, then you don't go to the grocery store. So if we want Krishna consciousness, sometimes people come and say, well, what does the Ram Krishna mission teach? Or what does the Paramahamsa Yogananda, what do they teach? And say, well, you go there, you want to know, go there. We don't teach that. You want Krishna consciousness? Come here. In fact, we don't recommend you go there, but better you stay here and learn about Krishna consciousness. This is not a smorgasbord or buffet where you teach so many things and then you take whatever you like. But rather, the specific knowledge of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. There's general knowledge is given in Shastra and practically how to apply it in your life. For that one requires a guru, and for that one requires submission. Bow down. Why should I bow down?
I don't see why I have to bow down.
You can hear, well, there's one, at the end of one lecture in Seattle in 1968, someone says like that. Prabhupada jumps on him. You don't think you have to bow down, but you will be forced to bow down by old age, disease, and death. So better you bow down to he who can free you from old age, disease, and death. If you think, I don't have to bow down, you will be forced to. But that forced to bow down is not very pleasant. Rather you bow down to, at that place where you can get the knowledge by which you can cross over death. You don't have to bow down to death. So pranipat, submission. Submission has to be there. That's another defect of this Ritvik system. There's no submission. It's just that, you know, well, he's just a priest, that's all. And there's nothing more to it than that. There's so many defects. There's no relationship established. It's just a function. You do the function, and then it's between you and Prabhupada. Well, how do I do this? How do I do that? You go and ask Prabhupada. What are you going to do? Practical guidance has to be there. But in Vedic culture, the practical guidance, one is extremely grateful for that someone has helped me, they've taken the trouble to help me. You'll see the culture is, of guru culture is so strong that even in modern India, there are so many drivers, professional drivers. And, I mean, they drive trucks, mostly. There are more than a million trucks on the Indian roads. So to become a driver, first of all, you have to become a driver's helper. It's like an apprentice. And the driver, you clean the window and you bring the chai for the driver when he stops. And he gradually teaches you how to drive and all the tricks of the trade, you know. How to deal with the police, how much to give them when they want a bribe, and all the things what's required to be a driver in India. So that driver's assistant, he treats the driver like a guru. He is very respectful. Oh, he's teaching me. That culture is there. But in the modern age, education is a purchasable commodity. So there's no relationship established between the teacher and the students. And the teacher doesn't care that much whether the students pass their exam or not. Well, he cares because it affects his reputation. But he doesn't personally care for them. You go to school and then you come out. Who's out of all of you here, apart from the children who are still going to the slaughterhouse or whatever you call it, is anyone keeping any relationship with their teachers at school? Anyone? No. They taught you, and you, the moment you leave school, it's finished. That's all. And even they may come and go. In the first 2 years, you have one teacher for science, and then someone else comes and takes it up. There's no relation. It's just a passing relationship. But chokudana diloje janme janme prabhuse. The relationship with one who gives us knowledge of Krishna, the relationship is in relationship with Krishna. So that relationship is not ended by getting a certificate. But it's an ongoing, even life after life. And so it's such a commitment. That's why we don't, in ISKCON, we don't, following Shastra, which states that, well, there are different statements, but in Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's stated that the one approaches a guru or a devotee and asks that you please guide me, and then, all right, but I have to see you for 1 year. And who approaches, they also have to see for 1 year. Then the exchange, because initiation, because it's a very great commitment. So, first of all, there's an initial seeing. Is this person, is he real to guide me? Is he just talking, or is he actually following? Does he mean what he says? Is he talking so many high things and then going off to the disco, or what's going on here? We have to see. Then if both parties are satisfied, then initiation. That's why in ISKCON generally, although sometimes there's also statements that one should, as soon as one gets the association of guru, one should take initiation. But that's generally not recommended in the modern age because people don't have the culture of understanding what is the meaning of that. So it's easy come, easy go. They may be frivolous. So in ISKCON, we're actually very strict, more than any other organization, Vaishnava or non-Vaishnava. Of course, others may be strict in other ways. They only admit persons born in Brahmana families. But that's a mundane consideration. You can go to the Gauriya Math and they'll initiate you on the spot, even sannyas. You might not even know you're initiated. They'll tell you, well, now you're initiated. I just initiated you. Really? It happens sometimes. It happens sometimes. But that's... that's not very meaningful. If there's no commitment, no surrender, no consideration, it's not very meaningful. So this pranipat, pariprashna, one has to question all the shastras in the form of questions and answers. One has to be inquisitive to know. Tad vijnanatam sagurum evabhigacchet. One must approach a guru to learn about Krishna. We say we have to get the mercy of guru, yes, but it's not just, what's that called? Shaktipat, the guru just blasts you with some electrical current or whatever, and then all of a sudden you're now I became Superman. It's not like that. There is transmission of Shakti, but by the process of hearing and serving. Service must be. Hearing what? Hearing that we're servants of Krishna. So then there must be service. Service is offered through the medium of the Guru, so we have to see how he is satisfied. Again, now this then becomes very personal, individual. Just like each Guru has their own likes and dislikes. And generally they all like to serve Krishna, but there may be personal likes and dislikes, just like someone likes to drink milk and someone likes to drink orange juice. One time he may like to bring me a glass of milk, he likes milk. So every half an hour you bring him a glass of milk, but he only wanted then. It's not like an eternal function. I have to now only milk. One time that Prabhupada asked for a glass of water, and they brought him a glass of milk. And said, why do you bring a glass of milk? Well, milk's better than water. But I asked for a glass of water. Another time he may ask for a glass of milk and say, but Prabhupada, last time you said you want a glass of water. Why can't you be consistent? So, there's foolishness. There's one story to exhibit the foolishness. There are many such stories, but the foolishness of one who follows without any thoughtfulness. One has to learn how to serve in a manner that is pleasing to the Lord. Just like it's in Shastra, it said that you should use the peacock fan from Shivratri to Kartik Purnima, which is the period now. So, but you're not using. That's good, because if you use in Mangal Arati, it's so cold. Definitely Gaunitai are going to get a cold. They're already cold. So even though in India it's hot at that time, but here it's cold, at least in the morning. So thoughtfulness, we don't use the fan, because it's pleasing for the Lord because it's cooling. So if it's already too cold, then don't use the fan. So there's a story like that there was the blind follower disciple. He's just following without thinking. One has to think also what is to be done. Intelligently understand the Guru's instructions. That Guru was going on a journey, setting out on a journey, taking his disciple with him. So the disciple was a little dull-headed. So everything was packed. Food, water, everything packed for the journey. So, along the way, the pack with food and water fell down. Wait a minute, stop here. The disciple was told that, don't do anything unless I tell you, because the Guru knew he's frivolous and stupid. So don't do anything unless I tell you. So they're going, the Guru's riding on the horse and the disciple is accompanying beside. The pack of food and water falls down. The Guru doesn't notice. The disciple does, but he thought, oh, I shouldn't do anything unless the Guru tells me. Okay, leave it. So they're going along and they stop at midday. It's time for lunch. So they stop and say, okay, get out the lunch. But it's 5 miles back, approximately. Why? Well, it fell down from the horse. Why didn't you pick it up? Well, you told me not to do anything unless I tell you. Okay. If anything else falls down from the horse, just pick it up and put it on my lap. So you're going along, and then the horse passes stool. So the disciple very dutifully picks it up and puts it on the disciple's lap. Sorry. What did I say? On the hot, on the disciples' lap, on the guru's lap. So, so the guru thought, what to do now? So I said, well, if anything else falls down from the horse, first of all, you ask me. And then only if I say, you put it back on the horse. Okay? All right. So they're going along and a dog jumps out and barks at the horse and the horse bolts up and the guru falls off the horse and falls down unconscious. So a disciple asks the guru, should I put you back on the horse? He's unconscious. So he doesn't answer. So the guru lies there and the disciple walks off with the horse. So this is an example of how not to be a disciple. Of extreme stupidity. Of course, maybe you say the guru shouldn't accept such a disciple in the first place. Didn't test him properly. So the disciple should act intelligently for the pleasure of the guru. The pleasure of the guru means assisting the guru in his service to Krishna. The pleasure of the guru doesn't mean that, as Prabhupada writes, the guru is not an enjoyer of facilities offered by the disciple. It's not that now he's become a guru. You were talking about that, right? When you become a guru in ISKCON. Actually, we should see all Vaishnavas as gurus, especially senior Vaishnavas. The very word guru means, one meaning of the word guru is senior. It doesn't necessarily mean one who's giving initiation. Any elderly person, or who's senior to us in devotional service. Father, mother, they're all gurus. Of course, here we're using the term guru as who gives initiation. But the important function of the guru, we're saying the guru here, is to give spiritual instruction. And the essence of diksha is spiritual instruction. Again, it's not this magic blast with some electric current, but giving instruction. So those who give instruction, they are gurus, whether by practice or by precept. Every Vaishnava is a guru. Even if they don't formally instruct, but just by their behavior, one can learn. One should learn from the behavior of advanced devotees how to behave in devotional service. So all Vaishnavas are gurus. Of course, one makes a specific relationship with one guru by who is the mantra guru, who gives mantra upadesha, who speaks the mantra in the ear of the disciple. But one may have and should recognize that we have many gurus. Whoever's giving spiritual knowledge, especially if we hear regularly from a particular Vaishnav, then they may be considered guru. So one hears from guru and intelligently applies that. And assist the guru in serving Krishna. And all facilities are offered by the disciple. And this way the disciple learns how to serve. The guru trains how to serve. Not that he has interest in sense gratification, but it's the duty of the junior to serve the senior. Even we're thinking all this service for guru, but that even that was normal in traditional India, for sons to serve their fathers like that. They'd bring him water, just like we see Nanda Maharaj telling Krishna, bring my shoes, fanning him, massaging him. The sons would do this service to their father. There's so much guru seva. People nowadays, they don't know. You have an electric fan, so no need to fan. Otherwise, in the hot season, fanning all night. That was normal thing. It's too so hot, so the disciple will stand all night fanning the guru. And then in the day doing service also, we can't imagine. We think if we cook a few chapatis that we're doing great service. Well, it may be good service. I'm not saying it's not good service, but how much modern conveniences have taken away the opportunity and along with it the spirit of surrendered service. So that was, it wasn't only for sadhus, but like that for one's parents, for any elderly person, guest. Elderly persons like children, they need to be served so much. But that was normal. The young girls, they're married, they go to their husband's home. It means their husband's father. So they have to serve the elders. That's their dharma. To serve the elders, to serve guests. Always service, service, service. So much service. Nowadays in India, the girls are getting married. Often they make the condition that we won't live with the husband's parents. Because they don't want to serve them and they don't want to be controlled by them. They don't want a guru. They want to be independent. Everyone should be independent. So now they want women's independence. But actually in Vedic culture, it's that Manu says, Nastriyam Svatantra Marhati, that women should not be independent. Probably no one's independent. She gets married, the husband's also not independent. He's under his father. And his father's under his father. And his father, he also, although he's, the grandfather will be the head of the family, or great-grandfather. Often four generations are living together. So even the grandfather has to follow the great-grandfather. Even the grandfather is 90 years old, but if the great-grandfather is 110, he has to follow what he says. That's the system. But even they won't, even he's not independent, because he has to act properly. And then there's the elders of the village will come together. And if one of them, generally the elders won't misbehave, but if there's any lapse, serious lapse of behavior, then they'll discipline them. They may even... So, no one's independent. Specifically said, women shouldn't be independent. Men have some greater freedom, but everyone is controlled, actually, in Vedic culture. So this coming under the control of guru. It's a very disciplined culture. It's not just guru and disciple, and you're disciplined by your guru and then not anyone else. But on the social level, on the spiritual level, control. In the modern age, they hate this idea. It's liberté, égalité, fraternité, and everyone goes to hell. In the name of liberty, you give liberty without training, without character, means they're going to come down to animal level, which we see. Liberty for the uncontrolled. This verse is speaking about one has to take strength to conquer the enemies. That strength comes from the discipline, following the rules and regulations, under guidance. Without rules and regulations, without laws, then humans are just animals. And we see the result. They thought it was... The French Revolution, they thought it was a very high principle that everyone should have liberty, but it's based on the presumption that people are basically good and of high ideals. But the actual result is that human society has come down to the animal level or lower. Because without training and discipline to come to a higher level, then... people go to the lower level. That's again that point. We're saying that bhakti is the feeling, but it needs guidance by gyan, which is, bhakti is like liquid and gyan is like solid. So without that guidance, the feeling, the water will just flow down to the lowest level. Our feelings will transmute into gross lust. So they need to be guided, pumped up by gyan. That is required. So the guru gives knowledge, who is Krishna, how to serve, what are the rules and regulations, One has to be prepared to live by the discipline. Sometimes devotees, they might look around, or who's the least strict? Who I can get away with the most and get the best result. It's pay less, get more. But it doesn't work like that. It happened. At least several occasions I know that some devotees were aspiring to take initiation for me, but were talked out of it. That, oh, he's too strict. You should find someone not so strict. Okay. But as I understand, that, well, if someone says he's very strict, you may react in two ways. You may think, oh, that's too much. I can't take it. Or may react, well, that's very good. That's what I want. That's why I want a guru. If you don't want discipline, then why go to a guru anyway? You want a guru, or what do you want? You want a picture on the wall you can wave some incense at? Guru blesses everything I do. We have a picture of Jesus. We believe in Jesus and we do whatever we like. And Jesus loves us. All you have to do is believe in him. It's not defined what believing in him means, but you just believe in him and he saves you from hell while you're busy making hell. So you just believe in him. It just is all theology reduced to a meaningless statement. As Prabhupada pointed out, believe means you have to believe his instructions and follow them. Otherwise, what's the meaning of believing? It's all hypocritical. So guru means who teaches what's in Shastra. And Shastra, there are certain rules. So mercy is there, but mercy means it's not, again, it's not just some transmission of some mystical current, but it's when the guru is pleased by seeing how one is sincerely practicing devotional service, then he bestows, then he's pleased and Krishna becomes pleased. It's not that, well, you give the guru all facility for sense gratification, and then he becomes pleased, and then you get all the blessings. That's the Sahaja idea. That you, or the caste Goswamis, that you're a guru, what's your qualification? Because I'm in a family of gurus. It's a mundane qualification. And then all you have to do is please the guru, you give him some money, you wash his feet, and you feed him nicely, and he blesses you. And that's it. That's the guru-disciple relationship. There's no teaching, and just you have to please him. And he's pleased. I remember there was in Bangladesh, there was someone was telling us that our guru was telling us, if I go to your village, you have to give hilsamach, this one particularly flavorsome fish. So I said, okay, it's difficult to get in our village because they don't come in that area, but all right, that's the condition. The guru is giving a test. Will you live up to the test of the guru? Will you go to the trouble to get the hilsam fish? This is perversion. This is not bhakti. But for persons who want to be cheated, they'll take it like that. Rather we should find where we're going to get training and guidance. Of course, in ISKCON, we're all followers of Srila Prabhupada. And guru in ISKCON means representing Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, if not, then that's your qualification to be guru is gone, isn't it? But representing means actually representing. It's not just like we're saying these caste Goswamis, Nityananda Vansha, or whatever, Advaita Vansha, because they're born in a certain family, therefore they're qualified to be guru. But no, you can be a guru, but you have to, to be born in Nityananda Bhakti is not a disqualification to be a guru. You can be a guru, but that's not the qualification. The qualification is you have to teach as Nityananda taught, as is received in Parampara. So similarly, even to be a member of ISKCON is not, to be recognized as a member of ISKCON is not in and of itself qualification to be a guru. One still has to follow Shastra. One has to act according to Shastra. If you say, simply, I'm faithful to ISKCON. Someone was telling me that, well, this person, he's not, we know he's not following properly, but he's faithful to ISKCON. So, okay, he's all right as a guru. But then it becomes like Nityananda Vansha. You do any damn nonsense and just, you have a rubber stamp on your head, member of ISKCON. But one has to be actually following. It is simply that we are recognized as a member of ISKCON doesn't qualify one to occupy the exalted post of guru. One has to teach according to Shastra and act according to Shastra. Otherwise, if one doesn't, then if one teaches something else, then Shastra as received through Srila Prabhupada, then, or we act in a different way, then where's the qualification? It's gone. And if we say, well, just to be a member of ISKCON, then we're bringing in caste Goswamiism. That some, you would think that to be a member of the Nityananda Vansha, that's a good qualification to be a guru, but it's not. So similarly, it's not simply to be a member of ISKCON. Is not in and of itself qualification to be guru. Of course, all the guru, of course, when we say guru in ISKCON, that's generally understood to be one who has that approved status. But there may be, as I said, every Vaishnava is a guru. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order. General order to every Vaishnava. Jare deko tare koha Krishna upadesh. Amar agya guru hoya tara edish. So every Vaishnava is a guru, even if he refuses to accept disciples, he's still guru, still heavy, weighty, not laghu, frivolous, light. Laghu means light. A guru is heavy, it means grave, weighty, by transcendental knowledge, by his commitment to Krishna, that's very weighty, significant. Whereas the karmis, even what they think significant is insignificant. I remember some few months ago, I saw some photo of I think it was a football team manager or something like that, or some sports team manager watching the game. And the look on his face, it was like, you know, it's like so committed, like, you know, like it's life and death or something. And they're just totally involved. And I said, when I first saw it, I thought, is he joking or what? It was my first thought. I thought, no, actually they do. They take it, it's so ridiculous, but they take it so seriously. But they take it very, very serious. Sometimes you hear of someone, their football team loses a game and they commit suicide or something. Or they shoot. That happened a few years ago. Some footballer, he made a mistake and he got shot dead for his mistake on the football field. People take it so seriously. This is laghu. They're very grave and very serious, but about the wrong thing. So guru should be grave. That doesn't mean he has to be with a rigid look on his face. A devotee is at the same time light-hearted. Brahma bhuta prasannatma, but grave because he knows labdva sudurlabham idam bahu sambhavante. Oh, it's another verse quoted here. Rideham sulabham sudurlabham. The purpose of human life is to connect with Krishna. And for Krishna's pleasure, Krishnarte akila cheshta, everything must be done for Krishna's pleasure. So he may not be very disturbed if he hears plane crash, 130 people killed, but if he sees there's an ant crawling on Krishna, becomes very upset. Why? Get that ant off. He's disturbing Krishna. So he's very grave. The guru means heavy, and all gurus in ISKCON, yeah, we're talking about all Vaishnavas are gurus, but specifically when we talk about gurus in ISKCON, we generally refer to those who have accepted the responsibility for giving initiation and accepting disciples. So all represent Srila Prabhupada, but again, they're all different persons. So one devotee's attraction may be towards the personality of one particular guru, or the style of teaching or emphasis or whatever. And there tend to be spiritual genetics, just like the parents pass their psychophysical properties onto their children. So similarly we find between gurus and disciples, just like you'll generally find, for instance, among Radhanath Swami's disciples, that they take very seriously, or they're very much concerned with serving other devotees, because Radhanath Swami himself emphasizes that so much. So his disciples naturally pick that up. Or you may find Bhakti Bhushan Swami's disciples are very much into distributing Prabhupada's books because he very much emphasizes that. Or it's more likely among Lokanath Swami's disciples that they'll be more interested in Padyatra because he, on order from Prabhupada, is that's service given to him by Prabhupada, so he takes more interest in that. So like that, some spiritual genetics, you could say. What the characteristics of the guru, they tend to be adopted by the disciples. Sometimes in the less important features also. Just like I see in one temple in India where I have quite a few disciples, I noticed how all of them keep their watch in their pocket. Because I do, I guess. It's not, well, that's not going to take you back to Godhead. But I suppose that's a sign of respect or something like that. But the tendency is to imitate the behavior of those we respect. So whether or not you wear the guru wears his watch in his pocket and or keeps it in his pocket, and you can do so also if you like, but it doesn't make you a heretic or a rejecter of your guru if you happen to wear your watch on your wrist, like most people do. Although nowadays a lot of people don't use watches at all because they use their cell phone and they have the time on their cell phone. Anyway, I'm just giving that as an example. We have to differentiate between, again, intelligent following. What needs to be... you see Radhanath Swami's disciples, many of them, they dress as he does, with this cloth wrapped around like this. It looks very like a sadhu like this. So, all right, that's nice. But they won't in and of itself take you back to Godhead. But... I'm going back to Israel. That won't do it for you, but it's a sign of some respect. But we should know what is the essence, the instruction, what to follow. Prabhupada was successful in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world because he understood the essence of his guru's teachings, which is to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Therefore, some adjustments need to be made. Adjustments not in principles, but in some details. That may be made, but not the principle. So intelligent following, not just imitating. One has to go deeply. Disciple also has to be guru. It means heavy. Otherwise there's no meaning. Of course, a guru may accept all kinds of people, people who just show some kind of interest in Krishna consciousness. The Pancharatriki Diksha is based on the principle of give people a chance. They're showing some seriousness, give them a chance. Vaidiki Diksha, you have to be so qualified to be a disciple that practically you have to be a pure devotee even before you start off. It seems like that. That just shows how strong the influence of culture was, that even before becoming a disciple, formally initiated in mantra, that one's training at home or was so good that one is already very qualified even before becoming a disciple, and one can, without being very qualified, one cannot become a disciple. So how do you get all those qualifications? One should be well-behaved, reverent, should be very clean, all these qualities, they're imbibed through culture. And again, culture, it's received from persons. So the first guru is the mother, and then all the parents, the family members. And so this culture that is imbibed, nowadays people are becoming disciples, but even basic culture in many cases is, they don't have it. So you're starting lower down on the scale, but just there's some desire to be Krishna conscious. So in that hope, the Pancharatriki Diksha is given. They're not qualified, but if they submit, if they follow, they can become qualified. So these are two principal kinds of Diksha. Pancharatriki Diksha, that's the system going on in the modern age, Kali Yuga. Pancharatriki Diksha is recommended. There are very few candidates for Vaidiki Diksha. And the strength, where to get the strength? Strength comes from, everything comes from Krishna. Balaram especially, he's the first expansion of Krishna. He teaches about Krishna. Nityananda. He is Guru Nityananda. He was sent by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu retired from preaching, he left the preaching to Nityananda Prabhu, who, even more mercifully than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or rather he represented the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, spreading Krishna consciousness very widely to everyone without discrimination. So Srila Prabhupada has certainly represented the mercy of, or carried the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. Therefore, we're all here today. Otherwise, we also, we're not qualified. When Prabhupada brought his Western disciples to India, the response from some people, from many people, was very favorable. Oh, how nice, these Westerners are becoming Vaishnavas. But among the Vaishnav community and the Brahmana community, generally there was a sense of rejection. Now, these people, they're not qualified to be Vaishnavas. Even some Gaudiya Math people who are now very anxiously snapping up whoever they can initiate from the Western countries, they were protesting at first that these Westerners, they cannot be devotees. They're not qualified. They're not clean, they're not pure, they can't pronounce anything properly. They can't be Vaishnavas. In your next life, maybe, not this life. So Prabhupada, he, as the representative of Krishna and Balaram, he went all over the world and he came back to Vrindavan and established Krishna Balaram Mandir just to show that Brajendra Nandan Jai Shachishuta Hoilo She Balarama Hoilo Nitai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. Nityananda is Balaram. And by their mercy, Dino Hino Joto Chilo, Harinama Yudharila. By their mercy, they give the holy names. This by which everyone is delivered. All the most fallen are delivered. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Nityananda to preach. Tell everyone to chant Krishna, Krishna. But he thought, what these people they're going to chant? He told them, chant Gauranga, Gauranga. Easy. Same name, but Mahavadanya Avatar. Oh, yeah. I'll finish. So you can give a few comments, no? I'm just going to finish now. You don't want to say something? All right. You also have specific bodily difficulties at the present time. All right. Vanchitosmi, vanchitosmi, vanchitosmi na sangshayaha. All right, well, Guru is leaving, so I'm just going to finish the class. I'll finish there. Anyway, are there any questions? There could be hundreds and thousands of questions. One question I'm being asked to address when I go to Finland is something about reinitiation, and it's people have different opinions. I might leave it at that. It's a question of faith. Yeah. Some disciples of Sridhar Swami or Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Yeah, and ISKCON passed away. Passed out means going on. That means also Gaur Govinda Swami and Tamal Krishna Goswami. Left with first initiation, yeah. They have two Diksha Gurus if they get Brahminical initiation from another Guru, yeah. No, actually, one only takes Diksha once. Taking Harinam is, technically, it's different from Diksha. Technically speaking. We say first initiation and second initiation. But technically, Diksha is what is initiation. Well, that's translated as initiation. Of course, the English language is something different, and what's understood in English is something different. But although there's only one Diksha, Diksha means to be initiated into mantras. If it's Vaidiki Diksha, then into Vedic mantras. And if it's Pancharatriki Diksha, then into Pancharatrik mantras. Although in our, what we call second initiation, we give the Pancharatrik mantras and the Vedic mantra. Both. Vedic mantra is the Brahma Gayatri, and Pancharatriki Diksha, well, the Pancharatriki, the other mantras which are given, the other six mantras which are given, they're Pancharatrik mantras. So, but the understanding is that by chanting the Pancharatrik mantras, one becomes qualified to chant the Vedic mantra. So actually what they do in the Gauriya Math, Prabhupada simplified it, or what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he'd give the Pancharatrik mantras first, then you chant them, then you give the Vedic mantra, the Brahma Gayatri. So actually Diksha is only one, but there may be stages in that. There may be levels in which one is gradually inducted into the Sampradaya. In the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they have various ceremonies and various stages, and the culmination is speaking the Charam Shlok into the disciple's ear, which in the Ramanuj Sampradaya, they won't speak this publicly. What is that mantra? The ultimate shloka of Bhagavad Gita, Savadhaman Parittaja Mame Kam Sharanam Raja Ahang Tuang Sava Pape Mokshayishami Masucha. They take this as, because Krishna says after this, what is that verse? Na tapaskaya na bhaktaya kadachana. This Nacha shushu shaveva chas. He says that this instruction should not be given to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service. So they take it very literally. But then on the other hand, Harinam is also, if one is given Harinam, Then Harinam is more than, someone said Sarva Mantra Sarnam, Aishastra Marma. Harinam is the essence of all mantras. So giving Harinam is more than, it's of more import than giving other mantras. Diksha means imparting mantras. That's the literal meaning. Divya, and the knowledge by which those mantras are to be understood. So one can have many gurus, but one only takes diksha once. But then you, that refers to one kind of diksha. One can take diksha many times on a different level, just like one may be take diksha for a specific sacrifice. The sacrifice may last 3 days or 7 days or 3 hours or whatever. But if the yajaman, the one who performs the sacrifice, or who organize, for whose benefit the sacrifice is performed, he will be given diksha for that yajna, before the yajna, so he can get the benefit for it. But as far as taking diksha mantras, one only takes once. So that refers to what we call second initiation in ISKCON. It's a bit of a complex subject, and it's made more complex by the English language, it's, or whatever language you're using, because initiation doesn't have the same. It's the nearest English approximation to the word diksha. But then, even among followers of the Vedic culture, they may also give different imports to every word. That's why defining words is very important. Mm. Then, any other question? Yeah.
You mentioned that disciple and guru should, for 1 year, have to stay test.
They should see each other, yeah. That's the standard process.
One devotee told me that actually his guru fell down. Mm.
Mm.
They're all traveling, and he's maybe for 3 days, 1 year.
It may be, but the checking may be also by consulting others. Hearing is very important, and that by modern technology, one can travel around a lot, and one can also hear, staying in one place, even though the guru is traveling. And generally, lapses in behavior, that becomes apparent quite soon. Following, basic following should be there. Spiritual genetics, I was talking about. That what the guru emphasizes, the disciple tends to take seriously. I was just reading in Shutakirti Prabhu's newly published book. Prabhupada was saying to one devotee, you are very advanced, you do not need to go to Mangaladi, but still you should go to teach, to set an example for others. So, if the guru goes to Mangaladi, the disciples, generally they'll take it seriously to go. And if he doesn't, they may not. They may think, well, it's not so important. So, Prabhupada very rarely went to Mangaladi, but he insisted that others do. He said, actually, I should go, but at that time I'm working on writing my books. So it may be that an advanced devotee is something even more important than going to Mangaladi. But for most devotees, it's so important to go that they don't have anything more important to do at that time. But then, if the advanced devotees, they may be doing something more important, but the tendency is for their disciples to think that, well, it's not so important, because you can do something else at that time. Spiritual genetics. And I was digressing from your question, but just something else popped into my mind about that point. So yeah, hearing. Another point is that everyone tends to get what they want. and what they deserve. Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. It's how you, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, you get the seed of devotion. How you conceive of that seed. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesha Junatishtati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutana Yantra Rudha Imaya. You tend to get what you want. So, you know, like I was saying, sometimes people there, they approach me for initiation and then I find out they got initiated by someone else. But, I mean, it would be nice if they told me. But it doesn't bother me that much because, you know, it's between them and Krishna. If they go to Krishna through, if they go follow Prabhupada's instructions through one of his disciples or another of his disciples, it shouldn't make that much difference because we're all following Prabhupada. But then again, you know, it's everyone gets what they want. Although I would prefer if people, you know, they approach, they want to take initiation, a very serious thing actually. So if you do decide to change your mind, first of all, you shouldn't approach unless you're serious about it. And it should be a very serious decision to change your mind. It's not whimsically. It's not like, you know, which pair of socks shall I wear today? It's not like that. It should be. So one shouldn't approach whimsically. Can I approach you for initiation? One should approach very seriously. So in between, there should be some very solid reason to change your mind. And it's not that you can't. But then if you do, also that you should inform. Otherwise, it's, you know, like I say, treating the guru like a pair of socks or something. So there's some gravity should be there. What we're doing. And by hearing, one should hear. The hearing is important. It's not just... Otherwise, it's sentimentalism. If it's, you know, I like the smile. Oh, he gave me a sweet. So, yeah, the personal interaction is there also. And definitely Prabhupada attracted so many people to Krishna consciousness by his charm, his charming person, his very great pure devotee of Krishna, full of love of Krishna. But Prabhupada himself took so seriously giving class, that devotees should hear the class, because it's not just a matter of smiling and I like the way he sings. So those may be factors, and that may be even be a principal reason for attraction, but then you have to hear. Otherwise, that's how people become voted as politicians, by their smiling. Yeah, but you have to see what this man's smiling, but you're going to vote him for president of America. What's his policy? It's not because he's more good looking than another. They reckon that the tightest America in the American presidential elections, the tightest decision to date. Late afterwards, it became with Bush and that other guy whose name I forgot. Huh? Kerry, no, before Kerry, the senior Bush, I think it was. I don't know. Anyway, one of them. It was extremely tight. But before that, the tightest count up was between Kennedy and Nixon, and Kennedy got in. Later, Nixon got in. So they reckon that the vital factor that swung the votes at the end was that Kennedy was more good-looking than Nixon, and Nixon was so busy on the last day of polling that he needed to shave twice a day to keep a clean face, and he didn't shave the second time, and the women didn't like that, and they like Kennedy's more good-looking guy. So more women voted for Kennedy. And that was the vital factor. That's what they... And then Ronald Reagan, he became president as like a kind of stage show. And that's what they want. And actually it's a fact. It's just the president, it's... You know, it's more what the profile is. But actually people should go deeper and see what does he stand for? So don't just see the profile. What does he stand for? What does he teach? What is my commitment? If we look for least commitment, then maybe we shouldn't be looking for a guru at all. If we're looking for someone who will demand the least from us, then the attitude seems to be wrong in the first place. Then maybe we shouldn't be looking for a guru at all. If we're trying to get the least thing that we have to do. It's a kind of cheating process from the very beginning. Any other question? What if one becomes attracted to a spiritual master for a wrong reason, because of his smiling and this and that? Well, if he is a bona fide spiritual master, then they'll be smiling and they'll be smashing, not just smiling. So you'll be, if he is teaching the... Yeah, if one has come for the wrong reasons, that's why the guru also has to test. If you're just coming because, you know, they like the sound of his singing and this and that, it's going to be very difficult to train someone. They don't have the idea that I need to take some discipline and be trained. So it may be superficial, but it's not that a bona fide guru can't smile or doesn't smile, or certainly his personality is very attractive. So maybe very expert, as Prabhupada is very expert in bringing in all kinds of people, many who are very sentimental, and training them in the process of devotional service. So, so many people come, they're attracted by prasadam. That's like a major reason they come. But the point is that if one's going to take a guru, one should go deeper. That then in the beginning one can come, take prasad and join in the activities. But then if one is to accept a guru, one should go deeper actually. One should be prepared to take the discipline and go deeper. There are so many points to be considered, just like you're saying, 3 days in a year, you may see. That might be more than many disciples in the past had, just like Ramanuja, Madhva, they would travel and give initiation and never be seen again by their disciples. But the Sangha was there. There were other devotees who were also, Ramanuja had so many sannyasi disciples, 700 or more than. So they were on, and he would keep them together and speak to them and train them and then send them out, and then they'd go out and then they'd come back again, and then he'd spend time with them. So Prabhupada worked like that also. He had a small coterie of inner disciples and they were supposed to train others like this. Many devotees think that, well, traditionally disciples always live their gurus, but it's not true in all cases. That's for the brahmachari living in the gurukul. But even then, he may take a further initiation even after being in the gurukul. Just like Advaita Acharya, he was superficially of Brahmana caste, so he must have received the Upanayanam, or the Brahminical induction into Brahminical status. But then when Madhavendra Puri came, he took Vaishnavi Diksha from him. It's on a different level. So it's quite a complex subject. One who is sincere can take the essence. Prabhupada said, I didn't meet with my guru more than a dozen times. But he took the essence, whereas others spent years with him and still they couldn't do what Prabhupada did. Well, they didn't get the same mercy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a continuum. Bhakti is generally a continuum.
I mean, not only like in connection with spiritual advancement, but also maybe in connection with some offense, maybe done.
It may be. It's very difficult to say. Exactly. But we'll generally any major event in one's life, we'll find that it's connected with some major punya or pap that we did in a previous life. And there are so many instances cited in the Puranas. Those who do this Bhrigu Hora, you go to some astrologer and they have the chart ready for you, prepared by Bhrigu Muni. In the past, that was prepared for you. You are supposed to come at this time and see the astrologer, and Bhrigu has already everything written about you in advance. And they'll say, I saw someone's chat recently. It's the chat of one of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So it said, due to some offense in a previous life, you will again, although you came from a very good devotional background in the previous life, because of some offense, then some serious result will come. And it was a very serious result. Extremely serious. So, Bhrigu could see that. What's the time? And that program's supposed to begin, what, at 11 o'clock? All right, yeah. Okay. Is there any other question?